The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Welcome to the final reading of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina for the month of October 2023. And this is one of those months with an extra week in it, so I get to read some of the small stuff that we don't usually get to. I'm going to start out with an article entitled In Search of Pocket Waterfalls, and then we'll get to some of those smaller articles at the front of the magazine. Although dwarfed by their thundering cousins, small-scale falls hold their own special magic. It might take some extra legwork to find one, tucked among the rugged peaks of the high country, but stumbling upon an elfin cascade is an enchanting reward. Written by T. Edward Nickens. Behind my buddy's house, north of Todd, in the shadow of the Amphibolite Mountains, a little-traveled trail parallels a small creek that flows under rhododendrons and through soaring forest. It's not a wide creek, but nonetheless, Julie gives it a hard look, calculating how she'll cross. I can hear what she's thinking. One big step to that rock, then a little step to that rock, and maybe a big jump the rest of the way. This trail doesn't have a name. I'm not sure that this creek even has a name, but it's best not to underestimate the challenge of rock hopping a mountain stream, regardless of its size. The Amphibolites aren't the best-known mountains of North Carolina, although they are impressive once you meet them. The range rises more than 5,000 feet in elevation in a grand, hump-backed escarpment that snakes across Ashe and Watauga counties and separates the north and south forks of the New River. They're composed of a special sort of hard metamorphic rock called, surprise, amphibolite. It's coarse-grained and toughened with amphibole and plagioclase feldspar, minerals you will not find listed in the nutrition chart on the back of your Wheaties box. Amphibolite rock is hard stuff. It weathers well and holds up to erosion better than a lot of other rock types. But that doesn't stop water from trying. All along this creek, small waterfalls plummet and cascade. These aren't thunderous cataracts that shake the ground, but pocket-sized plunges that you might miss if you're not careful. And I'm careful. I have a thing for a certain kind of waterfall. Small ones. Miniature, even. I'm drawn to waterfalls that fall a foot, or three, or five. Anything over head high seems an extravagance. I understand the attraction of the Marquis Torrents. North Carolina is known for its bounty of waterfalls, and we have some gully whoppers. Looking Glass Falls clocks in at 60 feet. Linville Falls rocks and rages for 90 feet. White Waterfalls is the highest east of the Rockies at 411 feet. They're all impressive. They make great photographs. Rainbows are through their sun-kissed mists. I'm sure that people have proposed at all of these falls at one time or another. They just don't do much for me, personally. I know I'm in the minority, but many of the well-known waterfalls are photographed so often in perfect weather at the peak of fall color that the experience is a bit of a letdown when I get there. Many attract crowds, and I have a thing for crowds, too. It's not a good thing. But I do like a pocket-sized tumble that plummets and plunges in 2-foot-tall stair steps and mossy slides and crystal-clear pools. Such waterfalls seem intimate, knowable, and there's an embarrassment of their riches along this amphibolite mountain creek. There seems to be a babbling tumble every 100 yards or so, the water pouring over a mossy ledge or through a cleft in a chunk of ancient stone. I rock hop a few feet to the base of a Lilliputian cataract and bend low, feeling the cool air on my face. Waterfalls create their own microclimates and microhabitats, nourished by the near-constant splash and spray of tumbling water and its cooling effects. And the water doesn't have to tumble from the heights. A cascade of 2 or 3 feet is enough to keep the air around the plunge pool moist and relatively chilly. Rocks host feathery mosses and liverworts, the oldest land plant known to the planet. Small waterfalls, pools can hold native brook trout and a host of salamanders. Even butterflies will seek out small waterfalls to puddle in the wet muck and probe for vital minerals. These so-called spray zones or spray cliffs can be incredibly active spots to sit by quietly and chew on a grain bar with your eyes peeled and senses tuned. Try that on a multi-story tumult, and you'll get doused at best. At worst, you'll be swept into the river only to wind up on CNN. Back on the trail, Julie and I keep climbing. This is steep country, and the creek narrows as we gain elevation. We reach a hogback ridge between two taller summits, but there's not much view, and the day is getting away from us, so we turn around to retrace our steps. When the trail crosses the creek, I instinctively glance upstream and down, looking for a telltale stash of white water. Oh, yes, I see it. But this one will take some work. A hands and knees shimmy under the rhododendrons, then a clamber over a mossy, downed tree to the base of a double-drop cascade that pours over each side of a rock slab. All told, that thing must be 20 inches high, easy. When I arrive, raked by rhododendrons and poked by briars, I lie on my belly and check out the waterfall. The scene looks like a model or a scale model of something out of Middle Earth. Countless tiny red sporophytes rise from the wet rock mosses like a miniature forest. A snail clings like a rock climber to a cliff face. Behind the veil of frothy water, a tiny cave yawns, dark and mysterious, perfect for a gnome picnic. I bet a salamander or two have popped the question in there. It's a curious way to consider waterfalls, seeking out the overlooked and unregarded. I'll give you that. But here's something else to consider. Whitewater Falls wasn't born in a day. It takes a lot of time to groove out a mountain face. Who's to say that 1,000 centuries hence, this little waterfall won't have worked its way through this rock, through this creek bed, through this valley, to tumble 100 feet or better in some gollywhopper bed of the future. Water and time, like the grand potter's hand, they shape the world. Okay, on to the small stuff at the front of the magazine. We're on page 17 now. This is under the heading North Carolina Icons. Apples. Tell David C. Vernon what your favorite regional North Carolina apple is, and he can guess where you came from. Hungry for a little bunny? Oh, let's make that a little Benny. You've got roots in Pamlico County, likely near Grantsboro. A small, sweet Tony apple? You must be calling from Stanley, Union, or Cabarrus counties. Vernon might even know your last name. What about a Mary Read? Well, you wouldn't know the taste of a Mary Read apple unless you bought one from Vernon's farm, Century Farm Orchards in Caswell County. His aunt, along with her neighbor, saved this tree, which grew in Vernon's backyard when he was a child. I thought everyone had a Mary Read tree, he says. I had no idea that the only two Mary Read trees in the world were on his family's farm. Vernon's journey to preserving North Carolina heritage apples started with a tree that his great-grandfather grew, the sweetenin'. I've made up the spelling because everybody's pronounced it kind of funny, Vernon says. In the 19th century, back when his family farm grew tobacco, this tree stood in the middle of the field so that farmers could stop for a snack. After the sweetenin' tree was blown down during a storm, Vernon reached out to heritage apple expert and Pittsburgh resident Lee Calhoun to learn how to graft the tree so he could continue growing it. Since saving his sweetenin' tree, Vernon has helped preserve hundreds of other apple varieties for families who have their own backyard heritage apples, trees. Rather, after all, a North Carolina apple tree is really a family tree. Century Farm Orchards have a website, and that is, oh, you'd never guess what it is. CenturyFarmOrchards.com. There's a picture here, and it says, Vernon tends to his ever-growing orchard, which includes Mary Read apples, the variety that his aunt once saved, and Esophus Spitzberg, shown in this picture, said to be one of Thomas Jefferson's favorites. And it looks just like a regular apple, mostly red, but some little yellow striping down the side or mixed in with the red. So it's not a pure red apple. It's one that has a little yellow color mixed in with it. And now an old orchard. In 1989, staff members at Home Creek Farm in Pinnacle were trying to restore the historic property's orchard to its early 20th century state. But they needed the right apple trees. So they called the apple expert. Earlier in the 1980s, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Lee Calhoun had settled in Pittsburgh and planted a few apple trees. His hobbies soon grew into the largest collection of old southern apple varieties in the country. Among the hundreds of trees in Calhoun's backyard were some of the only remaining examples of varieties that Home Creek Farm needed. Today at Home Creek's Southern Heritage Apple Orchard, visitors can walk among the more than 425 varieties of apple trees just beyond the original circa 1900 farmhouse, where the founding Hauser family would have enjoyed a few of their favorite heritage picks, Red Junes and Virginia Beauties. Horn Creek Living Historical Farm is on Horn Creek Farm Road in Pinnacle, North Carolina. And they have a very long website, so look them up on Google or Bing or your favorite browser. Core Memories, Brushy Mountain Apple Festival, North Wilkesboro on October 7th. Oh, we're past that. But they suggest that you explore downtown North Wilkesboro with 160,000 fellow apple lovers at the annual event. Festivities kick off with live music at the Apple Jam, followed by a full day of arts and crafts, cloggers, folk dancers, rope skippers, and countless apples. That would be applefestival.net if you're interested in next year's day. And there was an apple harvest festival in Waynesboro, and it has one of these really long websites also. And Lincoln County Apple Festival in Lincolnton has gone by, but it's lincolncountyapplefestival.com. And now we're going to read about the town of Newton, which to me, as a person who was born in Massachusetts, means one of the suburbs of Boston. But that's not the case in this article under Locals Guides. Locals in this Catawba County community have built a lively downtown using the resources and small-town pride instilled by former generations, written by Chloe Klingstedt. Very colorful picture of a mural painted on the side of a building. I don't know if it's a warehouse or what. Maybe it'll tell us in the caption. The Newton mural, Dream of the Arboreal Ursine, represents Catawba County's nature, agricultural, and history in one colorful creation. 5 years ago, construction workers discovered wooden pipes underneath the intersections of Main and First Streets in downtown Newton. And surprisingly, large sections of the old municipal water lines were still intact. They hadn't deteriorated or splintered off. How's that for circa 1855 engineering? The discovery of the lines came about as a result of the city's multi-phase revitalization project, which included revamping its streetscape. One piece of pipe, about 2 yards long, is now in an enclosed display at the Catawba County Museum of History. It's unknown what kind of wood was used to make the pipe, or how long it lay dormant before it was unearthed, or to how many local households it provided water during its heyday. But there it is, hanging on the first floor of the museum with pride. The discovery is a tangible reminder of the resourcefulness for which the county's citizens, self-proclaimed Catawbans, have always been known, then and now. From the repurposed historic buildings that line the downtown square to the golf cart parking lot that encourages new modes of transportation, locals are bringing Newton's history into the future. Under the heading Learn, Catawba County Museum of History, the local is Sharon Holbrook. Well, let's make that Susan Holbrook. Susan Holbrook grew up in nearby Conover, but some of her fondest childhood memories include visiting H&W Drug Company in downtown Newton to get an orangeade and a hot dog. She's worked at the Catawba County Museum of History for 5 years, but the executive director feels like working in the 1924 courthouse turned museum is part of the family business. Her great-grandfather, Glenn Noah Rao Sr., worked in the county registrar's office, once housed in the same building. She has a picture of him at work. While the picture isn't a museum artifact, it is a reminder that to Holbrook that most everything on display has personal significance because it likely came from a local resident. Everything we received is special to someone, so it's special to us, she says. Most of the museum's 60,000 items, not all of which are on display, are remnants of 19th and 20th century Catawba County history, including two full-scale parlors from the 1830s and 40s, items from a 1920s medical office, and a 1939 jail cell. Did you know? The museum keeps extensive records on Catawba County families. Individuals researching their genealogy are encouraged to use the museum's documents. And they're at 30 North College Avenue, CatawbaHistory.org. I spy. All of the items at the Catawba County Museum of History have a story. Use this checklist to guide your visit. Catawba County Seal. The red rug in the museum's lobby features the county seal, which is divided into four quadrants, each with a symbol: a cross for religion, a torch for education, a cow for agriculture, and a wagon wheel for industry, that highlights an area of life that's important to Catawbans. The Gourd Lady, the quirkiest exhibit here, tells the story of the late Margaret Sparkman, also known as the Gourd Lady, or Sparky. The display includes Sparkman's pumpkin and squash print dress and jacket, a picture of Sparkman with Jay Leno, taken after she appeared on his show, and some of her painted gourd creations. British Redcoat. Supposedly one of the few Revolutionary-era redcoats to exist in the United States. It was discovered by a family in Pennsylvania that has ties to Newton. They were going to donate it to the Smithsonian Institution, but that plan would have involved 30 pages of paperwork. The Catawba County Museum of History only required one. And courtroom. Even though the building officially transitioned from a courthouse to a museum in 1992, the courtroom on the top floor, which features two jury boxes, is still utilized when needed. Shop. Two pink magnolias. The local is Jennifer Stiver. After walking through the hot pink front doors of Two Pink Magnolias, shoppers in need of a gift browse the 4,000 square feet of retail space. Will they choose a T-shirt or a tote bag with bright letters proclaiming "Rootin' Tootin' Newton"? A sleeve of Moravian cookies from Dewey's Bakery in Winston-Salem? Or maybe just a thoughtfully worded card for an upcoming occasion from the store's Hallmark section? A sort of modern nod to the printing press housed here in the 1960s and 70s. The choices, jewelry, handbags, outdoor decor, candles, baby items, gourmet food, and more seem endless. When Newton native Jennifer Stiver teamed up with her mom, Rebecca Stiver, to open the shop in February 2010, locals didn't have many choices for shopping or doing much of anything downtown. Now, after selecting a gift, customers can head across the street to eat at the Hen and Egg, purchase a six-pack of North Carolina brewed craft beer from Poor Choices Bottle Shop, or head up the street to see a weekend movie at the renovated 1930s State Cinema. I love that we were part of the catalyst for that change, Stiver says. Check it out. Two pink magnolias can monogram your bag, shirt, hat, or item of your choosing. And they're located at 211 North College Avenue. Their website is the number 2pinkmagnolias.com. And now, play. The Green Room Community Theater. The local is Kathy Banner. When patrons pay a visit to the old post office playhouse to see a show, they pass by a gallery filled with brass mailboxes and a walk-in safe on the way to their seats. These touches remind locals of the building's original life as a New Deal-era post office before it was transformed into a performance space in 2010. Prior to the renovation, Executive Director Kathy Banner, originally hired as an administrative assistant, helped the Green Room Community Theater produced shows at what is now the Newton Performing Arts Center. In fact, she took the stage in her first green room show, Grease, in 1988, 1 year after the organization was established. Back then, it produced two shows a season. Now, with the help of a dedicated staff, Banner heads up 12 productions each season, including main stage and black box shows, and a free Shakespeare in the Park production, among other programs. Banner and her team focus on mounting family-friendly shows that help kids get involved in the arts. It's a wonderful outlet for young people, she says. The theater gives them self-confidence and the ability to speak. They're located at 10 South Main Avenue, thegreenroomtheater.org. They list a couple of shows here, but they are past relative to the time I'm reading this, so we'll have to skip it. How about eating at B52's American Bar and Grill? The local is Mitchell Ball. During the 1980s, Mitchell Ball and a group of his buddies would ride their bikes all around Newton's downtown square, taking breaks to visit the local arcade. Later, as a student at Newton Conover High School, he played center and defensive tackle on the football team, sporting the number 52 on his jersey. During the time I was a young man, businesses in town, Newton, had a downturn, Mitchell says. It wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that we started to see some growth back in downtown. Mitchell and his wife Amy became a part of that growth in August 2019 when they opened B-52s, named for the initials of their last name and his old number. To Mitchell, serving a crowd-pleasing menu that includes burgers, barbecues, salads, sandwiches, and incredibly crispy and tasty pub chips is his way of giving back to the community that raised him. There are so many mums and dads and people who I've worked with and gone to church with, Mitchell says. To have a place for them to come together with friends or families or coworkers, it really does our heart good. Suggest that you don't miss the Wall of Honor, composed of pictures of local veterans and service members. Mitchell's father is a Vietnam veteran. One of his grandfathers served in World War II, and his other grandfather served in the Korean War. Other family members have served in conflicts from Korea through Afghanistan. They are at 206 North College Avenue. And the website is B-52s, that's an S after it, AmericanBarAndGrill.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen to us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.